welcome to your all-out cricket pod blast. Here he is, loyal as ever, panting in the corner. It's Phil Walker, editor of All Out Cricket. How are you, Phil?
Very well, thank you, Alex.
Okay, Phil, I think we're going to lock horns this episode, but I'm going to save it on England's prospects and introduce first Joe Harmon, deputy editor of All Out Cricket, and also, are you head of the internet?
That is, in charge of the internet, yeah. That's big correct. Job, but someone's got to do it.
That's correct. And then it's an absolute honour to finally welcome onto the show George De Belt, senior cricket correspondent at ESPN, cricketinfo.com. I got there in the end. George, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good. Now, I think we should kick things off about England, and in particular, England's prospects at the World Cup in 2015. Now, they played two games in the warm-up. They lost one of them. In fact, they were thrashed. And in the second, they managed to provoke a batting collapse in a team that was missing out on its best batsman and win. So, Phil, you think that they're now going to win the World Cup?
Well, I thought that months ago anyway. Okay, listen, to clarify, I'm not saying that they're going to go ahead and win it, but I've been counterintuitively positive for the last 6 months.
That's right.
And you know that, and that is on record. That is out there. I'm not being cute after the event because they won a game a couple of days ago.
What you've actually inadvertently pointed out is we've been discussing this ad nauseum for months on end.
On air and off as
Can
well.
Can I pick up on that?
I genuinely feel and have felt for a while that there is some gold in there. It's just taken a little bit of mining, but I think there is some real gold
it's
in
there.
It's
been discovered.
And I also believe that they've stumbled on the right lineup now. I think the team that they played last time round, in most conditions out there, you might want to play Treadwell if it turns in New Zealand, etc. But I think the team that they picked 2 days ago against India is the best team that they've got.
Media gold rush. This is what's happening. Everybody here, the media, George De Belt, you guys are confident about England, aren't you? You're over at ESPNcricinfo.com. Give us the view of ESPNcricinfo.com.
I don't know what the official view is. Yeah, I'm a lot more confident than I was. I mean, we've rarely been criticised for being overconfident in the last year or two. The problem is, if they play a quarterfinal against South Africa and De Villiers comes off, what are you going to do? But I think they're going in the right direction, and actually they're quite an exciting side and a likeable side for the first time in a while.
Well, here we go. Joe Harmon, say something different.
Well, there is a sense of I've now am chiming a bit with Phil, and that there is a sense of optimism Lord. But the thing is, now we've got the team that everyone's wanted for the last 6 months, in that Cook has finally been moved on. You've got an enterprising captain in Morgan who seems to have authority over the side already. People want to play for him. It's noticeable that his mate Stephen Finn, second game in under his captaincy, takes a five for having not
you attribute
taken,
that to
well,
Cook's
you can't
removal.
Directly, but you can see a man. This is one of his best mates, and he's got a sense of confidence.
You're not
there.
Defending Cook, though, are you?
Absolutely not.
No, he's right. just having a go at everyone. He's
is there anybody? It would be interesting to know if there's anybody out there. I mean, Alistair Cook's mum might email him.
Are you
but
out
apart
there?
Apart from that, I'm not sure she listens.
I was talking there? With Joey about this recently, and I wasn't up in arms about him going to Sri Lanka. I'm a bit conservative when it comes to this, and I kind of tend to react negatively to the kind of the daily finalities of the Twitter crowd and all that sort of thing. You know, they're throwing everything they've got at Cook, who is England's greatest run scorer in five-day cricket. I didn't mind that he went to Sri Lanka too much, but there was obviously a line in the sand, and eventually they had to make that call. I can understand that most people wanted it before Sri Lanka. Personally, I was just about prepared to go with him in Sri Lanka, try and get some runs, try and get something going. It couldn't happen. He had to go. And I think everybody, looking at it rationally, had to make that call.
I'm not also... If Morgan had got the job for that Sri Lanka tour, I'm not convinced England would be in a better shape than they are now anyway. I mean, it was always an odd tour. The conditions so different to what they were going to have in Australia and New Zealand anyway. And actually, without the long run into the World Cup, if England can get some decent results, if they can turn over Australia in a couple of these games, then there will be that big sense of optimism.
We're still not getting the best out of Alex Hales, are we? He looks as if he's searching for it a bit. Yeah. I think he still could be.
It seems to have lost a bit of faith in him. Is that the impression you've got over the last...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But I still really believe in him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I would play him ahead of anybody, but I still think he's...
Morgan's a big fan as well, isn't he? He said Hales offers something that we don't have.
I think it was Broad originally who wanted to pick him. So yeah, I still think they're really exciting. I think it's an exciting side.
It is, and it you is. Used the word likeable, and that's a pretty good shout for me. There's the makings of an identity in this team that the one-day team traditionally hasn't really had. The one-day team's always been like the awkward, ugly cousin next to the test team. and only ever really a product of the Test team. Whereas now it seems to have its own character, and there are players in there that excite, but also beguile as well. I mean, Moeen Ali up top. I mean, I've never been more excited about an England opener. You know, up the top, the way that he plays is dashing, crazy, unpredictable, and glorious when it comes off. I mean, have we had a more stylish England player since Gower? You know,
we've got to allow them to fail as well.
Absolutely,
because if they're going to go, you know, people say 350, ridiculous though it is that people say this, but they say that that's a par course score now. And if you want Moeen to go out and score 70-100, there will be days when he fails.
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you, have to accept this and bear with him.
I think we're going to have a very short, mindless jingle here, and when we come back, we'll have the rebuttal. If you will.
Who's going to deliver that?
Where one man, alone, brave, isolated, but right, says what he feels about the hegemonic herd mentality of the modern cricketing press. Okay, what I'm getting serious, serious flashbacks to is the English football press circa every single bloody World Cup. Mm-hmm. In particular, the last one when they're talking about Ross Barkley. You know what I mean? You send in just yet another team that isn't properly hardened, that might pull it off on the day, that basically, you know, people quite like. And everybody's so absolutely relieved that they're not the turgid 2010 South Africa side that they all really get behind until they get knocked out the first round.
Okay, you're right.
Exactly what's happening.
You're right, and there are some facts on there. They've been bowled out in 10 out of 13. They haven't won a series since the dawn
of time.
5 out of
6, I think.
Yeah. So you're right, except I think there's a will to be positive, certainly for me there is, after a couple of years when we've been very, very negative, because everything we've seen has been deterioration, we've seen quite a lot of sort of bitterness and unhappiness. And actually now I do think they have turned a corner, but also at the same time we want to be positive, because I think the reputation of cricket in England is poor.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be responsible for people going off the game.
No, you're bang on.
And so we've made a conscious decision to be positive. Well, and maybe that's wrong, but I think, God almighty, it's time.
Yeah.
Well, that's moving. And Flintoff would agree, because Flintoff just did a half-time interview with Charles Dagnall, and he was talking about the Aussie commentator's attitude to the players on the field and how the narrative is much more... He didn't use the word narrative, but he was saying that they were being much more positive.
Yeah, but they're paid to be positive.
Not in a blinkered way, necessarily.
We've got to tell the truth.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, no, fair enough. I think, Joe, the real issue here with England is Owen Morgan. And that's what I'd like to come on to. And there's a reason why I'm coming on to Owen Morgan now. And that's because I think he might be featuring in a certain publication.
All Out Cricket Magazine,
that's
I think
right.
it is. Yeah. Yeah, we spoke to him back in November, actually. And then held back the interview, partly because of Philip Hughes and partly because England's ODI side was still so up in the air. And the captaincy situation's worked out in our favour, so we've got Morgan exclusive interview in the upcoming issue.
Everyone speaks highly of him.
Yeah, well, it's interesting.
Are you going to tell me he's cool, calm and collected, or is he a bit silly, a bit absurd?
I was going to use slightly different words, but say exactly the same thing. Yeah. He is an impressive bloke to me. He's always been very good with his time with us, and he's done interesting things with an interesting photo shoot with him. Naked. Having a whack, not quite that interesting. And in the past, he's shown us how to play, how his different grips work for reverse sweeps while standing in the snow for 45 minutes at Finchley Academy. Like he's an impressive bloke.
You'll have to show me afterwards.
He's I think he's what England need as well. I think he's exactly the right personality for them, as you say, a calm leader.
How do you rate his century against Australia given the circumstances?
Well, given the circumstances of just being handed the captaincy and how poor his form had been, I mean, it was an incredible knock and out of a modest total.
Yeah.
He's got a phenomenal record as captain, which has been pointed out already. He's averages 78, I think it is, as England captain, 2 tons already, which was the stat I dug out the other day. So he's got more tons as England captain. So the same number of tons as England captain as Hussain, Stewart, Vaughan, Gooch, and Collingwood combined.
Stat
so
attack.
he's doing all right. He's all right.
Successful as several people who are really unsuccessful. Yeah.
Well, that's all we can say.
Hugely encouraging.
Isn't that all we strive for day to day? It certainly is in my world.
Very high.
George, look, we're being positive. This is wonderful, isn't it?
You're corrupting me.
I'm glad you came. It's the rum is flowing, and so is laughter and joy and complete delusion. So wonderful.
Alex, why won't England win it?
Because they are simply not experienced enough to get out of more than one decent total game in a row. So if somebody sets minimum 270 against them two games in a row, they won't win two games in a row.
It's a fair argument, but how experienced were the World T20 side of 2010?
You think I don't listen to the Switch Hit? I've heard this argument. Mm-hmm. Can we come to the Switch Hit, actually? I understand from, you know, spying, that the Switch Hit, which I love, is recording tomorrow night. Is that right?
No, tomorrow morning, I think.
Tomorrow morning, yeah. Tomorrow. Are you holding back anything for the Switch Hit?
Have you listened to Switch Hit? Okay, to be a little indulgent, it's so nice to be here, because this is... Honestly, I stumbled across this show. I think you may have sent me a link when you were bizarrely talking about my sex life, I think it was, or something like that. Do you remember?
It was sexy. It was definitely sexy.
Yeah, which was very odd. And it's really nice that you're here.
And then you thought of us.
And I thought that All Out Cricket would be your natural home. And I'd say, this is
sexy.
It's like seeing my children.
All Out Cricket.
For the first time, except for this time I'm here and not particularly drunk.
All I'm saying is, George, that was lovely. If I find tomorrow that you drop the bomb with some piece of hot opinion on the Switch Hit that you've held back,
what do you want?
Be comeuppance. Let me tell you.
How dare a man deliver an opinion to his paymasters?
There'll be predictions.
The amateur spirit is alive and well on the Pod Blast. We're going to take another short, nay, silly break, just to check up on a few things, and we'll be back.
What? What are we checking up on?
Who could say?
I want to know. She's got another job.
All will be revealed.
Ooh, we're going to talk about dark horses. Dark horses. Dark horses.
God, you miss Ross.
Yeah. Where are you, Ross?
Ross, I'm missing.
Please come back.
That was weird. Maybe I've drunk a little bit more than I thought.
No, that was normal.
How much was an advert on this show cost? I want to advertise Switch Hit and the Cricketer. How much should that cost?
Switch Hit. Yeah.
I would be happy to advertise Switch Hit because I appreciate the quality of it. Can I also tell you another show that I appreciate the quality of? The World Cricket Show. I don't know whether you listen to it. It's two posh blokes in Guernsey.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Fabulous.
A recent rival started up. Did you notice? You may have heard of them, the BBC. They've started a cricket podcast.
That'll never catch on.
Yeah, not happy about that one bit. Anyway.
Who's on that?
They've got Alison Mitchell, and they've got the Aussie, Laurie, is it?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
And I haven't listened to it yet, but I will do. So
sounds quite strong.
Yes, it does.
Plucking our rivals.
Oh,
come on,
let's move on.
I saw it advertised. Oh, that would be great. Alex, brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. We're going to have a feature where we educate, because that's really one of the core values of the Pod Blast. We educate as well as speculate. And today we're going to talk about a single dark horse player rather than team New Zealand. We'll come on to New Zealand, Joe, don't you worry. Your special topic, your expert topic.
My dad's New Zealander if you haven't got this.
I'm going to the World Cup on the New Zealand passport.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got two of them. So we're going to pick a dark horse player. Maybe somebody that people, they might have heard of them, but they don't know much about them. Okay, can we kick things off? George, if you're ready to go,
hit me
with your rhythm stick.
Well, I'm going to go with quantity rather than quality of analysis.
I love that.
Lendl Simmons, I know he's been around forever, but he times the ball so beautifully. I always think he should do a bit better.
With a crazy backlift, doesn't he? Kind of throws it out
with
to
a bit of a flourish.
Rounds it, a bit Amla-like, and then he comes...
Well, a bit Moen-like, but right-handed.
And named after Ivan Lendl as well.
Corey Anderson.
Yeah.
He's going to whack it, isn't he? He's going to win a game
or two. Yeah, yeah.
You don't look as
previous fastest century before AB.
Yeah, exactly. Which is
36-400. Yeah. Not sure he's a dark horse, but let's carry on.
Ed Joyce and Paul Sterling, are they dark horses? I just thought Ed Joyce, one of the best batsmen in England last season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Paul Sterling times the ball so well. I always wonder why he doesn't score more runs.
Game first up against West Indies as well. That'd be a big one. Ireland, West Indies in Nelson, I think. That's got banana skin written all over it.
Yeah. Which side?
You would
worry about bowling to Chris Gale.
Sure Gale's going to be there, though. I mean, the things that Gale is saying currently around the team are so, so grim, and they're getting walloped so
We're bleakly. Talking about the West Indies later, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think we're coming
Let's get into the West Indies right now. We may never.
I think we're in the end days of West Indies cricket.
Yeah, that's genuinely how it feels.
I followed on Twitter for the first time last Friday Kirk Edwards and Kieran Pollard and Ram Naresh Sarwan.
Right.
Because I saw it being retweeted and I could not believe what I was reading from current players who still represent West Indies in certain formats.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible to me.
Yeah.
Instead of the sort of bland stuff you get out of most international cricketers, They are furious.
What about the selection?
Yeah, the selection and what's happened with the West Indies board. And they're accusing the West Indies of dishonesty. Kirk Edwards as well. I mean, he's never been that much of a player, but he's going for it.
I think it's also got to be remembered in this that there's no one's smelling of roses in this. And the West Indies side went to India to play a high-profile and important test and one-day series, and within a few hours of being there, decided that they weren't prepared to play because of an issue over bonuses. Now, I just put myself in the position of a fan, and that would break my heart, because these boys are not short of a few bob, and I know that there's a principle at work here. I know that you enter into a contract with your employer in good faith, and I understand all of that, but as a fan, you would be heartbroken by this. You're looking forward to a big tour, and suddenly your big players are saying, we're not prepared to do this anymore. So nobody's winning here. This is not the evil administrators versus the heroic players, that, you know, the loves of your life. Nobody's winning on this one. And it's harrowing to watch. And it's not surprising that on the one hand you have a discredited Clive Lloyd, and on the other you have a bunch of players who are increasingly ostracised as well, and who have ostracised themselves.
It was so disappointing to see Clive Lloyd come out and basically try and whitewash this idea that he said Bravo and Pollard hadn't been picked because they hadn't had any exceptional performances in the last 12 months. Look, if they don't want to pick them because they think they've done something horribly wrong in causing the strike in the first place, then say so. You can't have a scenario where you've got the chairman of selectors pretending they've picked a squad just on quality and leaving out two of their best players. Bravo was in the ICC ODI team of the year last year. I mean,
it's Clive Lloyd who played Packer cricket
as well. Indeed.
It's amazing how short memories are.
Yeah.
But I think the players made a massive mistake by bringing India into it, because their grievance, West Indies players' grievance, was with their board. And what they did is inadvertently wake up a tiger and irritate the hell out of
them. Yeah.
And they've chosen their foe very unwisely. So what I think will happen is there'll be a rebel league. Here you go, I'm not holding back. I think there'll be a rebel league announced soon, and I think the West Indies players will join up.
Well, it's funny you say about rebel league, because we're not going to talk about the debate on franchise cricket, but it has been really heavy at the moment. There's just not going to be enough time in today's episode. But I've been thinking the whole time through that, crikey, if it's such a good idea, somebody just might as well just set up a rebel league, to be honest.
Well, and not just that, but the ICC have lost any moral authority. And here's the other thing. The demise of West Indies cricket reflects very badly at Giles Clarke, because part of the carve-up of the ICC saw more money go to the top three and less money go to the others. And the fact is that West Indies cricket need a bit of nurturing, as to Pakistan and other countries. And they've gone the other way with it. And I think... you know, Giles Clarke thinks he's going to get a knighthood and thinks his reputation will be England being number one and more money in the game than ever before. I think the demise of West Indies cricket will be his enduring legacy.
Yeah, and by the same token, India as well. I mean, as far as I'm aware, they're still pushing through with legal issues in regards to suing the West Indies board,
I think they could take their World Cup money, you see. I think they could directly take their World Cup money. The ICC, as I read the ICC regulations, have to pay the money directly to India instead of West Indies.
Right.
Which would be terrible. But I'll tell you something that always cheers me up. Since Giles Clarke's company struck oil in Paraguay, do you know his company is the largest landowner in Paraguay?
Mm-hmm. I've been looking to buy there for a while.
Since they struck oil, the oil price has gone down 60%. This cheers me.
Let's all contemplate global oil prices and its impact on Giles Clarke's business career.
Every time you fill up, you're hurting Giles Clarke. Come on. That's got to cheer you up, hasn't it?
We've got some sort of country and western music, because it's the Wild West out there, isn't it? It's crazy. Hey, talking about the Wild West.
This is terrible. I can't believe this is happening.
We've just partridged.
You made it happen, as you said. We're your children. You've got to take a lot of the blame here.
Chris Cairns, the parents, in court with his former barrister, Andrew Fitch Holland. Do you know the Fitch Hollands?
No.
Ah, the Fitch Hollands, they're lovely. So Chris Cairns and the Fitch Hollands were in court just the other day, and his trial has been set at Southwark Crown Court for October this year. We can't say any more due to the fact that we may derail an entire criminal justice process. So I'm going to leave it right there. But just put a little mark in for October, you lot with a diary. Mark it down.
I don't want to hold anything back. Can I ask a question about that?
You fire away.
Well, you know when Cairns was originally cleared and
in the defamation trial.
Yeah, and Modi had to supposedly had to pay damages.
Yeah.
Well, at that time, if I'd been Modi's solicitor, I'd have asked the ICC if there was any evidence or if anyone had made any complaints against Chris Cairns. It turns out that McCullum had.
Yeah.
So why is it the ICC hadn't told them? Or had they? But if I was a lawyer, that's a question I'd be asking.
It would be a reasonable
question. I think I smell third-party disclosure lawyers out there. This is lovely stuff.
This is legal corner, isn't it? Odell,
look at his cheeks. Is that a fair question?
I'm really worried about ruining an entire trial process. I'm going to stop. I'm very, very concerned about the fact that, you know, a judge may shout at me. Anyone else?
Maybe. I don't. Yeah, Giles Clarke and all the judges all in the London, judges. They're all listening.
You're going to be glad that you invited me on this show, aren't you?
I'm sure we were talking about dark horse players for the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Time, I didn't get Shapour Zadran.
Right.
Tell us about Shapour Zadran.
I'm not absolutely sure. I think he's the left-arm quick bowler, and he is quite good.
That'll do.
So, most associate sides, though, they have little dibbly-dobbly medium paces who do a lot of their bowling.
And just wheels.
He is pretty sharp.
And they've got Hamid Hassan as well, who's also quick. They've got the two of them.
Yeah, I suppose Ireland had Boyd Rankin, didn't they, who was sharp?
Mm-hmm.
But generally, you know what I mean? There's a lot of Roland Lefevre types.
Mm-hmm.
But Afghanistan are fun to watch.
They're great, aren't they?
They hit the ball hard. They play aggressive.
They've got to play West Indies as well,
fast.
Right?
They've got Leggy. I can't remember the Leggy's name.
I tell you what, I can segue the shit out of this.
Go on.
Let me segue this shit. Afghanistan's first opponents in the World Cup, Bangladesh, right? My player of choice, dark horse, Robel Hossain.
Nice.
Yeah?
Nice.
Right arm fast bowler for Bangladesh has been released on bail.
Jail bait.
This is outstanding reason as well.
Is he fast?
He's fast.
That's irrelevant. Is this criminal record that Alex is interested in?
He's just been released on bail by a Bangladeshi court for the purpose of releasing him for the World Cup. He was arrested because he apparently made false promises of marriage to an actress.
That's outrageous.
What a player.
Was it particularly serious that it was an actress?
Yeah, I don't think that's the charge.
That's the statute.
Woman is the word you're looking for.
It's aggravated. Aggravated form is when you do it
Does
with
that
an
mean
actress.
If you are engaged in Bangladesh and break it off, that you go to jail.
Yes, exactly that.
But you're still allowed to play in the World Cup.
But that would encourage unhappy marriage.
I'm worried about Bangladesh.
There'll be a lot of unhappy wedding marriages. No?
I'm barely beginning with this topic. Let me tell you, do you know how? Anyone can tell me this, I will give them an extra slice of cake. Can anyone tell me how he got a cricket career? How did he get spotted?
YouTube.
Did he make false promises about his ability as a player?
Can I give you a clue? It's a half clue. You'll have to be slightly lateral. But do you remember the film Million Dollar Arm?
Yeah, right. The John Hamm film.
Yep. All right. Go along those lines.
He was discovered by a TV producer wanting to put a TV program together about promising young Bangladeshi quicks.
That's right. And he was bowling with a tennis ball with tape on it. And it was a speed gun competition, which he won.
Superb.
And that's how he got into cricket. And he's been released to go over with Bangladesh. Can I then move on to Bangladesh and then I'll shut up?
That was nice.
Mm.
Bangladesh have not been playing warm-up games since they trounced Zimbabwe. They've been back in Bangladesh, and I take this from ESPNcricinfo.com, practicing scenarios, they call it. 8 different match scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
They travel to Brisbane on Saturday, 2 weeks before the tournament starts. Are they playing warm-up matches? No warm-up matches. More scenarios for the Bangladeshi team. The only public utterance about the side is that they think they're going to start with 2 spinners, and they may bowl first change spinner as well. So 3 spinners straight in.
They actually turned
in
down warm-up games, didn't they? They turned down warm-up games. I can't remember which sides wanted to play them, but they were worried that they would lose to them and it would make them look
bad. And they've just beaten Zimbabwe 5-0, which is great. You want to go in on a 5-0 win, don't you?
Oh, they were saying the confidence they took from the Zimbabwe win. Well, this is extraordinary. Okay, so that's my pick. Robel Hossain, what a player. Joe Harmon.
Mine's a Kiwi. You won't be surprised to learn.
Not surprised at all.
I've gone for Adam Milne, who's... Oh, you're right there.
Yeah,
just throwing a beer on the... That's all right.
Keep some kind of radio discipline.
All good. Just an errant red stripe, that's all.
Who's a rather wild and often rather injured, but very quick bowler, being clocked at 95. He was a bit of a wild card pick, really, because New Zealand have opted for him over Matt Henry, who's a more more reliable, steady seamer. But it's indicative of New Zealand.
Honestly, there's no discipline here. That's De Bell. Do you know, Mill I'm interested in because I saw him in the team sheet and I thought, well, this is a player I haven't heard of. So you managed to understand
that's
brief.
The game, right?
That's absolutely right.
But yeah, it's indicative of New Zealand's approach generally. They've gone for him over Matt Henry. They want someone who can bowl properly quick. They're an aggressive side. They're in great form.
Can we have the obligatory New Zealand dark horses talk? And can
well,
we
they're
also
not, no
put
longer
out
dark horses. They're not dark horses.
I think they're second favourites, aren't they?
They must be. They're at home. I mean, this is huge.
And they're playing all their group games at home. So Australia are actually going to New Zealand to play them, which has kind of got lost somewhere
them
along the way.
Who are favourites when they play England in May? They look a good
side. Over here, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
With Bolt and Southie in May, you're not going to fancy that.
I'm not sure they've got a spinner, but I mean, do they need one at that time?
They had an informed Bolt and Southie last time they were here.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And they still lost.
But they're batting so much stronger. And Williamson is always looked like a great batsman, but didn't really have the numbers to back it up.
He might be the best since Martin Crowe, anyway, might
yeah.
he? Best New Zealand player since
I remember Ian Smith saying he had the best leg side game of any New Zealander since Martin Crowe, and he looks to have pretty much complete game at the moment.
Amazing, yeah. Country with 3 million, which is, or 3.5 million maybe Four. Now, which, okay, yeah. But still 10 million fewer than the population of Mumbai.
Yeah.
Amazing. What they keep producing bowlers who can bowl sharp. And there's a pretty much a great batsman every generation.
And we've talked about this before as well. They also bring players through who seem to have relatively modest first-class records in New Zealand, which isn't the highest standard. But then they play Test cricket and seem to actually excel beyond their first-class stats. And there's been a few examples of those recently.
And it's also the cricket's obsessive cult of leadership as well. You know, McCullum is the sexiest cricketer on the planet at the moment.
He's up there, isn't he?
Yeah, but for me, if I could swap with any cricketer on earth, it would be McCullum. You know, he runs that place. He's a beautiful player to watch. He's rich. He's humble. He's not under too much pressure, and he produces. And he's raising the standard for that team.
He's got a great
year
brother.
After year after year.
Got a good brother.
And he's great. He's great, McCullum. He's
and in Test cricket, he makes all the other
captains we're talking about Nathan.
Look bad by having these aggressive declarations, which make whoever it is, Cook or even Smith the other day, look conservative.
I'm not that keen on aggressive declarations.
No.
Oh, but anyway, whatever. That's another point, isn't it? I don't mind.
But
that.
His point, I spoke to him about this last year, and he said, look, as New Zealand, we've got so much less to lose than England and Australia. We can make an aggressive declaration and lose the game, and we're not going to be pilloried for it. Wins mean a lot. But saving a draw doesn't mean so much.
Do you remember that game at Leeds where Cook didn't declare for a while?
Mm.
And
Botham went berserk.
Yeah, loads of people went berserk. And England won by a country mile in 3.5 days in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah. And none of them said...
England won in 3.5 days. Yeah? England... people just need to have a longer memory. Well, I swear to God what happened there, as a journo, I swear to God what happened there was lots of people had arranged to play golf on the fifth day.
Honestly, I think they wanted them to enforce the follow-on. Mm-hmm.
If we're taking a trip down memory lane, then you can't just have it that way, because I think Cook delayed too long against Sri Lanka when they didn't bowl them out at Lord's.
Well, they waited
until the century had happened, and you know Sri Lanka were nowhere near the runs in that game.
Slow
and
over
then rate. They lost a series against Sri Lanka off the back of it.
True.
So
slow overrate hurt them there as well.
It's more in McCullum's case though. It's more that he's quite vocal. He says we've got to be prepared to lose. We are New Zealand. We are a middling team. We have to be prepared to lose in order to win. And that attitude is refreshing, especially for an England fan.
Whenever
it is,
you quote
because
Shane Warne,
even now
an angel
they
is
still
sick
talk,
in its own mouth.
Even now they still talk about Cowdery's declaration, and or rather Sobers' declaration against Cowdery's England. They still talk about that moment. They talk about Gower's declaration against Greenwich.
Oh, we never
all
talk about
that kind things. Of rubbish. And
there was nothing with a declaration.
We still
against
we still,
West Indies.
Yeah, for sure. But it's still held up as indicative of us being kind of wild or kamikaze, and you should never give a team a chance. And we grew up with that kind of attitude, and it's nonsense. And McCullum, as this kind of embodiment of the modern game, is able to kind of break through that, and that's a positive thing.
I don't think it's nonsense, but McCullum is a lot of fun, no doubt about it.
The weird thing about dark horse,
He can't be a dark horse. He's a shining.
The weird thing about it, his ODI record is shocking over the last year as well. After being scoring so many runs in Test cricket, he's averaging 20, I think, for the year in ODIs.
Stat me up, Joe. That's the kind of insight.
It's like Sehwag. Sehwag's ODI record was not great, really. You know,
yeah. McCullum, I think, averages 30 in ODI cricket, which is
20 fewer than Jonathan Trott.
I forgot to mention Robel Hossain's Test bowling average. He's played 22 games. His bowling average is 73 at Test level after 22 games.
Who's this?
Robel Hossain just doubling back.
Really?
Useful.
Yeah, I just, you know.
Do you know Jonathan Trott will be at the World Cup?
Yeah, he will. Yeah.
He's working.
In his capacity for ESPN.
You
pulled a few strings, George.
I did. It was all my idea.
Nicely done.
And I'm hoping, well, I'm not hoping that someone breaks a finger. I'm hoping that they realise that he's there and they go, oh, if only we could find somebody who averaged 51 in ODI cricket.
And scored 200 out in Australia.
25% more than anyone else who's ever played.
It's Test cricket, though, isn't it? Isn't that that's the one that's...
No, ODI cricket, just 51.
I realise that, but no, that's, if you're keeping it realistic, it's Test cricket that's his target. George, that's the side he can get back
into. His target, but what about my target?
Yeah.
George,
it's
I know
not all about
this.
Him.
I know all this because I listened to the last episode of The Switch here. You're recycling, George. You can't do this to me. It's not going to get past my defences. I need new stuff. You're hiding it.
I've never mentioned the Rebel League before. I just said that West Indies is going to stop playing Test cricket.
Can we go a bit on Trot being a Test opener next summer?
We can if we have a little break.
Next summer? Next spring?
No, sorry, this summer. This summer.
I was a bit too shy to actually sing something over that because there's been a certain degree of criticism, kind of bullying in the room about, you know,
your comic abilities.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll see you in the tribunal. Now,
it's not easy to sing in this podcast.
So I tell you what, Page Three have got rid of topless ladies, but that doesn't mean there aren't boobs in cricket. David Warner, for one. Is
brilliant.
Brilliant. Thank you. Mm. A whole week. I'll be writing it many different ways. So let's talk about David Warner and let's jump into sledging and this, that and the other. George, I noticed the other day on Twitter that you said that he, well, may not be your favourite player, David Warner. Am I right? Is he a lovable larrikin or is he, as the Australian and Martin Crowe would suggest at the moment, literally the embodiment of all that is wrong in cricket? Or is he indeed somewhere in between?
Well, he's clearly somewhere in between. I don't find him easy to love. I mean, he's one of those...
Well, that is play. Let's start with that. Do you find that easy to love?
He's a pretty good player. He's a very good player. I don't think he's... Actually, England bowled quite well to him in the first innings of the Ashes Tests. So I still think he gives you a chance because he pushes at the ball a wee bit. But so did Ricky Ponting. He managed, eh? He had a decent career. So, look, he's a really good player. But I was in that press conference where he kind of slagged off Trott when he went home. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And I do find him quite hard to love. He's one of those guys.
Did he not know? But at that stage, is it fair that he didn't know what had happened?
Even so, I think that, yeah, it is, and that's a fair point. But I think even so, you don't put the boot in when someone's down like that.
Yeah.
And I think most people would have known that. But I don't think I'm a bit surprised about the level of criticism he's getting. I think Australian cricket, in many ways, is quite ugly, if I'm honest. I think it's quite ugly. And I don't think that James Anderson was great, has been great for the last year.
No, he's been terrible.
Because bearing in mind he's such a champion player, and actually he seems like a really nice fella off the pitch. I don't think it helps.
Do you ever?
And I do think cricket's a bit special.
That's fine.
And I think it should be special.
Well, do you ever read The Guardian, who have The Spin, they have it, it's sort of a blog that comes out about cricket,
of course.
Argued recently that this Warner issue and behaviour was another attempt by the ICC to effectively distract from the big issues in cricket, which is... poor governance, bad takeover,
well, it's not what Martin Crowe's
match
doing,
fixing.
Is it?
So that's the way they view it. Now, Martin Crowe is separate.
Yeah.
We'll come back to Martin Crowe because it was obviously sexism gate in relation to Martin Crowe. But just, you know, are you buying that it's some kind of bent arm bowling ICC distraction technique, or have we got a problem with behaviour on the cricket pitch?
Personally, I think we have a problem. I do, yeah.
I absolutely agree. I thought it was interesting that in 2008, I think it was, when that Andrew Symonds, Harbhajan Singh stuff was kicking off Australia, India, they did a poll in Australia about the Australian team's behaviour. And this was when they'd won that game at Sydney and they'd gone berserk afterwards and there was all that kind of stuff swirling around. They did a poll and resoundingly, the Aussie public were disappointed, disillusioned with the attitudes of their team. I also think that that applies to a degree with our own team.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think certainly in 2013, we'd become a rather unlikable team. And I think the public kind of reflected that. And I think overall in cricket, if there's one thing that's really, really disappointed me from the last few weeks, it was that if we couldn't find any glimmer of positivity to take from the tragedy of what happened to Phil Hughes, it was that there was no shaving off of the rough edges of Australian cricket, and that they are just as bolshy and just as...
He's not an active.
Well, I don't often agree with Aggers. I think he's a broadly ludicrous individual, but I absolutely agree with him on this one. Fully, 100%.
Not fully, not the quote.
I haven't read the quote, but I know that he's
storing away Michael Hughes, Michael Clark's.
I keep it in my pocket to throw at them, and he has since said, in all fairness to them, that was not the right thing to say.
But you know what he means? It was clumsy. It was clumsily spoken.
Listen, no, but I'm
not built like you lads. I haven't read this quote, but I do believe that in its essence, that was what I hoped to see in the aftermath of what happened. I hope that there would be a kind of a reinvigorated brotherhood amongst teams, yeah. A recognition that this is all it is, but this is something anyway, and that we're all in the fight together. I wanted to see that. What you saw in the India series suggests that that's not really applied. Warner's so bloody thick that, I mean, he couldn't register on the scale of kind of human emotion.
Well,
anyway,
I mentioned the other
day
on the radio that I wasn't sure he was brought up in captivity. What do you think?
Oh, mate, when we were out there last year, it was a brutally ugly and inhumane press conference that he gave in regards to Trott. But then there were other bits as well around it. You know, there was a kind of a lack of recognition.
Class.
And yeah, for sure. But a lack of...
Technically,
kind of repentance.
He can't speak Hindi.
This is the point. I like that.
Technically, he can't speak Hindi.
Did he mean when
it's
he
ugly.
Said speak English?
It's ugly.
Did he also say more slowly at the end? He's not bright, is he?
I've got.
Not only was he not brought up in captivity, not everything is meant to be. And
no,
I think they should just release him back into the wild.
But there are plenty of sportsmen who aren't bright, but they have a kind of a strand of decency running
Listen,
through.
I think
I don't really get that with him.
What he's just said, what Phil's just said, generally, is spot on, and it shows why he's doing such a good job, and he's such a beautiful man in many ways.
Georgie boy,
I genuinely mean that. I think he's basically spot on. Cricket is a bit special. It doesn't have to be like football. Mm. And we've got to keep it that way. We've got to try harder to keep it that way. And David Warner is, you know, he's got so many good qualities as a player. We know that. But his legacy, what's it going to be? Look, we're in
it's
the
not the legacy.
Room.
Look at what Darren Lehman said. He said, in terms of the line, we're going to carry on what we're doing. If the ICC say that that's not in the spirit of cricket, then that's something we'll have to deal with.
Well, then he is shirking his responsibility, and I think that's a shame. I mean, he's got a bit of a track record himself.
It's something,
I'd like
something,
to hear from Joe,
but no,
because
it's something about cricket.
Argument.
It's something about cricket as the game that it is. And I'm not talking about that in a romantic way. It's just, it's a non-contact sport. And my friends, who most of them don't have any interest in cricket at all, will see some of these standoffs and just think, that's laughable. That's pathetic. What are they doing? The scariest thing in cricket is to send down a bouncer at 95 miles an hour that goes past someone's head. It's not to stand there afterwards and, like,
it's
give a shit line.
It's the Joe O'Garner argument.
Yeah, and there have been many witty lines over the years, but the stuff that we're hearing now, there's no wit there. There's no charm. And also, it seems that the
David
players...
David Warner is not Oscar Wilde.
He is not. And and it seems as though...
He might be Pistorius.
It doesn't seem necessarily as white line fever. It seems that these players go off the pitch and actually don't really socialise either.
I have sympathy for The Guardian, though, because if you want to take a sort of Marxist perspective of the whole thing, it is amazing how you have a go at the guy who's just a bit unsophisticated, who didn't necessarily have all the opportunities, and you tell him that he's acting like an animal, whereas at the same time they're doing things which, in terms of monetary value and damage, etc., are completely disproportionately worse. And I think that was a perfectly fair argument.
That's like saying,
to wait.
You criticize, okay, so some guy chucks his litter out of his car window onto the street, and you say we should be criticizing BP. You know, you can criticize both of them. God knows there's enough time in the day.
Well, you should be criticising BP more than you should be criticising the guy who throws it on the street.
Well,
there
maybe.
Be a,
I don't think Shrini is getting
things.
Any... Well, maybe. But I think Cricket Australia have a responsibility, and Lehman does, to crack down on David Warner. And not just David Warner, but Michael Clarke. I mean,
Would you say I mean, the ECB have never...
Categorically, yes. I mean, I said right at the start of this, James Anderson,
yeah,
who I quite like as it happens, it was miles out of line last summer. And
there's never been any recrimination at all. There's never even really been a suggestion he needs to watch his...
Well, he's been better since, hasn't he? I think it was... It gave him a hell of a shock.
That seems to be a personal thing rather than
I think stuff happened. I mean, I think at one stage the ECB offered to discipline him internally.
Rather than have the circus that surrounded it.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
But the BCCI demanded a 2-game minimum ban, at which stage that deal fell apart. So, you know, I think James Addison would admit that things were going a bit too far, but he's been told that he's better when he's aggressive.
Mm.
And I just don't think you need to be calling someone names to be aggressive. You can shut the hell up. You know, Michael Holding managed to...
I don't want to go on for too long on this point. There's just one last point. It's a sort of burning that I'm just going to spill it out, which is that I don't know how much cricket, sort of crappy amateur Sunday cricket you're playing at the moment. And actually, I'll be quite interested to know how much crappy Sunday amateur cricket you're playing at the moment. But in the cricket that we're playing at the moment, out of a season of about 7-8 games, I would say 50% have some kind of antisocial incident. That is somebody telling the umpire to go fuck himself, or somebody starting on somebody, etc. So we're talking about Sunday village cricket, all right? Now, I don't know what it was like 40 years ago, because I wasn't alive, but I eat my hat if that is what it was like 40 years ago, because it's not the way my dad or my grandfather would describe it. So I do think that there's something up. I don't think it was always the same in the old days as it is now. I think it's worse. But, you know, at the same time, the hegemony of power and what they're doing is also equally explosive.
Hegemony.
And terrible.
We could go on for days on this one.
I think both of them was pointing
his finger at opposing batsmen and umpires in 1985. You know, it has taken place. And I think it's always murmured in the background of cricket, but it's got to the point now where it's kind of just standard. It's de rigueur. It's just there. It's there in your face all the time. And because of the nature of TV coverage as well, and because of the press,
that's the other thing.
It swirls around
that's
it all.
That's the best story.
For sure. And it's a legitimate point that you make. Because you say your mates, they're only interested if someone's having a punch-up. So it is a part of the nature of modern sport and modern professional sport, for sure. But for me, I may be lost, I may be old-fashioned, but cricket kind of should stand for something good. It should stand for something a little bit more substantial than that. You know?
If we have to sell cricket, I could agree again. If we have to sell cricket on punch-ups and controversy, then I don't think we should be selling it anymore. No. I think we should let it bloody well go. We should let it go. I don't want to see cricket, and Test cricket in particular, like an arts council-funded type of modern dance. If people don't want to come anymore, let it die. I think it's a wonderful, beautiful game with special qualities, and I think we have to fight to keep those and let people know. But you know, if we lose that battle, I don't want to keep it alive on a ventilator.
Artificially,
that's true. Absolutely. But you guys are interesting and passionate about it. But quite a lot of the time, the people that are also saying those things are the very forces that were very conservative and damaging towards cricket. A lot of the clucking and tutting about behaviour tends to come from privilege. So if you're going back in the day and you're saying about, say, the way Fred Truman behaved. Well, you've got whoever was in charge of the MCC at the time, Gubby Allen, who were Pelham Warner, clucking at Fred Truman.
Gubby Allen, isn't
he? Yeah. But there's always...
He's not here to protect himself.
We're no Gubby apologists, right?
No, just sure. But there's always somebody in power tutting it the way that somebody...
Listen, Wolfie,
in years to come,
I think
Gubby Walker.
All in good time, yes. All in good time.
That's good.
God, there's so much I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about Kumar Sangakkara coming here to the Oval, to Surrey. I wanted to talk about the impact of day-night games on England, because really, they're not very good at day-night games. But we've got no time. George, our time is drawing to a close. And over smooth jazz, who better placed to speak over smooth jazz than George DeBell? George, tell us, what's coming up for you? You're travelling for one of these little England shindigs? World Cup?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Sorry, did you want more?
No, that's fine. World Cup will do. What's coming up in the magazine next month?
Well, Joey's exclusive with the England captain. That's what's coming up in
the
magazine.
Can I say a moment? I don't know whether I'm allowed, but Joey is going to be taking a sabbatical from the Pod Blast.
Don't panic.
For a little while.
Don't panic.
He'll be back. But Joe, we just want to say we'll miss you.
That's very touching. Thank you
very
much, Alex.
The fact that Ross won't be here and Joe won't be here.
It's strange, won't it?
Phil and I will be sitting in an empty room.
It's going to be something like Waiting for Godot scenario.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Morgan. Jason Holder, we've interviewed Jason Holder, the sacrificial lamb of the West Indies
cricket.
Tells
us why he is West
Indies. Dale Steyn as well. We've got a bit of Dale in there. And
got Dale. We've got Jason Holder.
Stuff. World Cup special.
World Cup special.
Go out and buy it. Go out and buy
it's all in there.
Cheers, George. Cheers, George.
Huge pleasure. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Yeah, cheers. Thanks.